Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
One of the issues with our team right now is mental toughness, discipline, and execution.
Blame no one. Make no excuses. Do something.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jason Staples. Here talking about the first week of Florida State spring practice and a bunch of question and answer and all sorts of different things. So strap up, and I'm going to try to get through a lot of stuff as quickly as possible today. Not as much in detail through the first week, but before we do that, I have a quick message from one of our special guests.
Hi, I'm Troy McClure. You may remember me from such educational films as 2 minus 3 equals negative fun and Firecrackers, The Silent Killer. I'm here to talk to you today about the new initiative from the Unconquered Podcast, the Unconquered Podcast Network of Realtors. You've all been amazed by the photography and videography of Luis Marquez from Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, Florida. Well, prepare to have your mind blown by other realtors in other regions, all connected by the tradition of excellence represented by the Unconquered Podcast. The latest addition to this stable of thoroughbreds is Eric Rostad from Keller Williams Realty in Nashville, Tennessee, and the surrounding areas. Eric is tireless and will make sure you get the best possible experience in buying or selling your home. It doesn't even matter how many aquariums you may have. More to come soon. Just remember, the best realtors are unconquered realtors.
Thank you, Troy. And now we're going to go ahead and get to lots of stuff from this first week. Now, first thing I want to tell you is, yes, they had two open practices the first 2 days. And, you know, there are lots of reports about how Marvin Wilson, say, was dominant and, you know, this and that about the lines and all sorts of things. Here's the thing. Just remember that those open practices, which, you know, a lot of fans were able to attend, and I think that's great. I think this is the sort of thing that that more teams should do, and I think it's terrific for Willie Taggart to do that. But just keep in mind, when you look at reports about this player or that player looking really good and that sort of thing, those are shorts practices. Nobody's in pads. You can't tell anything about anything on the line until you actually have pads on. So the majority of what is out there about who looked how and all of these other things, aside from, say, how a quarterback looked throwing the ball or, you know, different things in terms of guys moving around, there's just not a whole lot to report on in terms of quality. Now, there were some position moves, some interesting things in terms of depth chart and some experimentation with moving some players around. And that stuff we can talk about. That's some stuff that's valuable. And other than that, I mean, the reason that they open those practices, the reason that it's the first two practices and not, say, the middle of spring, is because there's nothing to show. There's nothing that you can actually benefit from seeing if you are potentially an opponent or, you know, some spy for an opponent. You're just not going to be able to get anything out of those practices. So just be aware of that. But beyond that, spring practice has gotten underway, and we should be this weekend. We're approaching first pad practices, and you know, those will start to show the new coaching staff what they've got, the new offensive coaching staff, that is. And, you know, it has been encouraging to see Ron Dugan's working hands-on with those wide receivers and all of that, and that's great. But, you know, now those young guys especially are going to have a chance to start to show out. So, and I will say, I mean, some of the stuff that's been posted looking at, say, Warren Thompson, you know, the kid moves really well for a kid that big. You know, some of that stuff, movement and those sorts of things, you can see. Beyond that, well, you know, it's first few days of spring. There's just not much to get out of that. But as far as some of those position changes, you know, we've seen Cameron McDonald working with both the tight ends and the wide receivers, and that's regarded by some as a position change. It really isn't. What it is that they recruited Cameron McDonald as a flex player more than anything offensively. What they're doing a lot in Brile's system is that they're going to be using a player like Cameron McDonald as the kind of player that you can put out there and you can run multiple formations with him on the field without ever having to slow down or make a substitution. He can play H-back. He can line up on the line of scrimmage. And then all of a sudden he can be the widest wide receiver on the field because he can play wide receiver just like, you know, anybody else. So is he a speed burner? Is he a speed merchant like some of these other guys? No, but you still have to account for him like a wide receiver out there. And on those screens and that sort of thing, he gives you a big body and, you know, somebody that can block on a lot of the screens and those sorts of things that, that Briles likes to run. So that's not a surprise. I expected, and we talked about this actually when Cameron McDonald was recruited, that he was a kid that they were going to end up playing at he'd line up out wide, he'd line up flexed, he'd line up, you know, H-back, he'd move around quite a bit. And I expect to see some of that even with McKitty, with him moving around a little bit, because again, he is a matchup problem. The more interesting changes are in the secondary and at linebacker. Hamza Nasiruddin is playing linebacker right now. He's at the star position, that kind of hybrid linebacker safety position, lined up closer to the line of scrimmage. That's where Jaden would be, or now Jaden Lars would be. He's got his mother's maiden name in there. He's hyphenated it and wants to get some special attention to mama's last name as well. So that's all fine with me. He was the star last year and very good at it. But he is now working at the boundary safety. Working with the defensive backs and they're going to see how he looks back there. But he's also put on about 8 pounds. He's over 220 now. He's like 223, 225. So, you know, that's going to be interesting. But yeah, those guys have switched spots for the time being. And then Levante Taylor has been lining up at the field safety position, which is that it's kind of like, and again, we talked about this last year before the season, that what you're getting at that field safety position is really a third corner as much as anything else against any spread defense, that it's kind of like running a nickel defense, but without the extra safety. And so the nickelback is that field safety. You just don't have a third safety or, you know, a second safety behind the nickelback like you would in a nickel defense. So because you're playing that guy at the star position and playing him closer to the line of scrimmage to try to stop the run and do more like that. So you need somebody that can cover like a corner in that spot who also can come up and tackle sort of like a linebacker or at least like a safety. I mean, the ideal field safety player would be somebody like LaMarcus Joyner. I mean, that you put a LaMarcus Joyner at field safety in this defense and he's pretty close to the ideal. Cause now you've got a guy that has no problem tackling in and near the line of scrimmage. And also, you know, he's going to be a lockdown player in coverage. Obviously Jalen Ramsey or Derwin James could also play that position just differently than the norm. And you can't really use those guys as an example for anybody because nobody else is like them. Long-term, I mean, I would ideally like to see Carlos Becker take that role just because of what I've seen of him in the past. But again, you can't count on him right now to be healthy. So he's going to have to prove that he can be healthy and that he belongs at that spot. And then you can start to figure out what you want to do around that. But yeah, I mean, I think that's he may be the best fit on the roster for that. Another guy that I think would be a really good fit at that, that's currently on the roster on campus is Akeem Dent. And he's also been working with the corners and the safeties, obviously. So, you know, he would be a very good fit at that field safety position, even in year one. So, but right now Taylor's getting work in there, while they have, the corners, the starting corners right now are Stanford Samuels on the boundary. And then on the field side, you have the other Samuel. You have Asante Samuel, the small. And again, he's a smaller guy, more on the field side. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to put your best five on the field between star and the four secondary positions and just get them in positions where their skill sets are able to be maximized. And that may mean that a guy that might be best at corner might end up playing at field safety just because he's the best of the group at field safety. Like him at field safety allows the drop off at corner to be less than, say, the drop off would be at field safety if the next best guy is there. So that's really what they're trying to do. And again, with Woodby potentially at boundary safety, that changes, or I'm sorry, Lars Woodby at boundary safety, that potentially changes the, you know, three of the four secondary spots. And if you look at the numbers, we talked about this earlier in the offseason, that last year the safeties really got crushed. I mean, they got absolutely killed last year, but with the safeties in coverage, and they're just trying to figure out what they can do to maximize that. And moving somebody like Nasiruddin to linebacker, where he's not going to be in quite the same coverage bind, but he can cover like a safety at linebacker while also being the hard hitter that he is at linebacker, that makes a lot of sense. The thing that makes less sense to me, and you know, I got some questions about this, about what you think. The thing that makes less sense to me is I'm not sure that in this defense, if you're going to play a lot of quarters, if you can afford to have a 223, 225 pound safety at the, on the boundary side, you know, teams are going to spread that out, get one-on-ones there. And basically Lars Woodby is going to have to convince me that he's quick enough and he's fast enough to play that, that position at that weight. Otherwise, you know, what I would look at is, can you play, say, Woodby and Nasiruddin at linebacker and let them each, you know, Lars Woodby and Nasiruddin play at, you know, 220 plus at those linebacker spots, and then have another guy play the boundary safety. That's what I would be tempted to do. That is, play Lars Woodby at the will and Nasiruddin at the star, or vice versa, whichever one works, and then say Dontavius Jackson or Leonard Warner at the Mike linebacker. And then if you need a bigger backer in there at one of those spots, then you take one of the others off and you put Jackson and Warner both on the field at the will and the Mike, and then have the other at the star. And then you put another guy, more of a coverage guy, at that boundary safety spot. And then you've got a defense that's really well geared to stop the pass. Go ahead and go spread on us, because we have basically 2 6'3" plus safeties at our linebackers. And then we got 4 defensive backs that can all cover. And then you're going to have a hard time throwing on that. So good luck with that. Now, again, that may open you up to a team that tries to run it a little bit more on you, but I think both Lars Woodby and Nasiruddin can handle that in the running game. And then you may have something. That would be what I would be more tempted to do. But I think my suspicion is that Lars Woodby prefers to play safety, and they want to give him the chance to win a job there. And if he wins it, if he shows he can do it, then, you know, more power to you. Then you got a kid that can stop the run there. But if it doesn't pan out and he's not going to be the starter there, then he can move back to linebacker, and then you're actually better off anyway, because you've moved Nasiruddin there, and now you've potentially got 2 safeties with linebacker size at linebacker, and you have a lot of flexibility defensively to do a lot of things. You're effectively in a perpetual dime defense with big hybrids at those outside backers. That would make that really interesting. Now, a couple other things worth bringing up in terms of non-position change or position tweaking discussion is it has been confirmed that what you're going to see is Snyder coordinating the special teams and working with the linebackers. To me, this confirms that once prying eyes aren't watching, that we're going to see more odd front stuff from Florida State next year. I know that was what ultimately Willie Taggart's preference was coming in. I mean, you look at what he did out at Oregon and the flexibility of that defense. I think that's really what he'd like to go for. So a little bit more flexibility. And that to me suggests that what you're going to see is some odd front type stuff, some 3-4 type stuff. And again, that's where some of these questions of, okay, do you play basically with 2 Mikes on the field, Warner and Jackson, and then Woodby and as outside backers, and then play a little bit bigger up front in some cases? Is that something that you do to specifically slow down some of the spread options, some of the passing games that you're facing? Maybe not necessarily what you do all the time. And yeah, they're probably going to run a lot of 40, a lot of odd, even front stuff, because of the ability of putting, say, Kando and Janarius Robinson on the field at the same time. Maybe that's your best 11 most of the time, but I do think we're going to start to see more odd front stuff from this group. With 2 linebacker coaches, that's normally what you're going to see more of. What that means is you're going to get one guy that's usually going to work more with the outside backers and one guy that's going to work a little bit more with the inside backers. But, you know, we'll see. That seems to suggest, again, what I had indicated in the prior podcast that we could expect. So we'll see what happens from there. The other thing that has been confirmed is that they did not get a waiver, and the appeal seems to have lost in terms of moving Dave Kelly off the field for next year. I was not a fan of moving Dave Kelly off the field to begin with. He would not have been my choice of coach to move off the field. But they definitely wanted to try to balance the staff out by adding a second defensive backs coach to help Harlan Barnett with that group. But for this year, they're going to be unbalanced, and they're going to have an extra coach on the offensive side. Although, again, Dave Kelly is a really freaking good coach. I don't think people realize that with the amount of experience that he has, the guy can help on either side of the ball. He can provide an overview look if he needs to. He can help on either side of the ball. He can basically be support wherever it's needed. And it'll be interesting to see what his role is beyond recruiting coordinator and beyond basically talent acquisition for Taggart and Florida State. So, but he's going to be on the field one more year. So that's another thing that's come out of late. Now, I've got a few other questions that I should get to before we move into any other stuff from the spring. I got a question, and I didn't write it down who this was from, so sorry about that. I've heard from friends of mine that follow the other two schools in the state that were sniffing around the grad transfer quarterback from Wisconsin, Hornibrook. Is this true? Well, I got that question about a week ago, and it's true, and as it turns out, that has more or less been confirmed by the fact that Hornibrook is, as of the time that I'm recording this, already on campus visiting Florida State to see whether or not he actually wants to wind up there. But yeah, he's a guy that they're sniffing around. Is he a guy that is an ideal fit for everything that they do? Probably not. But is he a guy that could come in and help you? Probably. I mean, he managed to do a lot at Wisconsin. Took them to some big bowl games and was very successful there. So be interesting to see whether or not they're able to attract him, but yeah, they're interested in him and you know, he would be a very helpful addition to the roster given the state of the depth chart for 2019 and the fact that after 2019 they should be fine. So all right, let's go ahead and take another message from one of our special guests, and then we'll return shortly after that.
Lots of people out there are schemers. I'm just a dog chasing cars. I wouldn't know what to do with one if I caught it. Fortunately, I have schemers to do my work for me. EPR Creations. They partner with small businesses, no matter how much of a joker you are. And take care of website development, online strategy, scheming, and all. Look, you need a better website. Not to mention marketing, and they're the ones you want. You look nervous. Is it the scars? Want to know how I got them? Why so serious? Let's put a smile on that face.
All right, one other question to get to before I do anything else. This is, I have an opinion question for you now that things are slowing down. Bobby said years ago that he preferred the ACC because it was easier to win championships than in the SEC. If the choice would have been the SEC, how many championships would we have over the past 26 years? What would the program look like today? I'm guessing money issues would have been a lot less, and our bag men would have had much bigger bags. Thanks, and go Noles. Ooh, that is a really tough question. I actually want to take the last part of that first in terms of, I'm guessing money issues would have been a lot less and our bag men would have had much bigger bags. I don't think that's true at all. First of all, you got to remember that the ACC was the richest conference in college sports through the early 2000s. So really until the second wave of expansion, the ACC made more money than the SEC. And that's one of the other reasons that Florida State chose the ACC, is Florida State made more money from television and other things than because of ACC affiliation for a long time than what the SEC got. It wasn't really until the new contracts that came with the SEC network and when all of these contracts were renegotiated around 2010, 2009, you know, between 2008 and 2012, it wasn't until then that the SEC actually jumped ahead of the ACC in terms of revenue. The ACC actually made more, but it was once that landscape changed and the ACC actually happened to negotiate a year or two earlier than the SEC and under-negotiated. They got out-negotiated in that contract and they didn't think that a conference network was necessarily that great of an idea. And the SEC was much more forward thinking with that. So the SEC got a bigger deal. And also because SEC football was at its peak right there and ACC football had been down, football was starting to pay the bills much more, that reversed. But that was only, that was after 20 years basically of Florida State making more money for having been in the ACC than what they would have made in the SEC in terms of media contracts and otherwise. So that's important to note, is that the money issues would not have been less in the SEC. They would have been more. And secondly, in terms of bagmen, those bagmen wouldn't have had bigger bags either way, because you look at bagmen and where all that comes from in college sports, it's not the media contracts or that sort of thing, because it's not coming out of official university coffers that stuff's gonna come. You know, you don't have universities that have a slush fund for paying players behind the scenes. It's your places like Alabama that have old money with big time Alabama fans that are boosters, lots of millionaire fans that have nothing better to do with their money than to figure out what, you know, bag to put it in. That's where you're getting the big bags. And no amount of conference affiliation is going to change the fact that Florida State is a young school that didn't go co-ed until, 1948? And when you're not going co-ed until 1948, 1950, you're not going to have the same old money buildup that a lot of these schools that have been around since the early 1800s, some of them even before that, have. You know, you've got old guard, you know, fourth generation graduate from Alabama or Texas or Texas A&M, and that money's been in the family for generations, and that money's been earmarked for helping the school for a long time. That's where your real support on that end comes from. And Florida State just doesn't have that. So, and actually being in the SEC and not having gotten the advantages of ACC membership for 20 years, Florida State would be worse off now, I think, in money terms than they would be otherwise, than they are because of having been in the ACC. So now going back to how many championships would Florida State have won over the past 26 years, that's a tough question. So it depends on whether you mean, I mean, obviously national championships versus conference championships. In terms of national championships, I think you can make the case that Florida State would still probably have wound up with about three, just because of the nature of how those particular arrangements went. If anything, Florida State might have one more title having played in the SEC prior to the playoff, prior, say, to the BCS. Because I think Florida State would have won the 96 title in which Florida won that title. Florida State would have probably won the 96 title, would have still won in 93, would have gotten the 96 title. I don't think anybody was beating him in 99. So through the BCS, I think, or up until the BCS, I think you have, they'd have probably had two instead of one. Then 99, BCS, they're winning that one. And then 2013, I don't think anybody's beaten that team. So I think the title, the national title thing, they might have had one more. And that's just because in 96, they would have dodged the rematch with Florida. They would have played somebody else and that team probably, even with all of the stomach bug and all of the food poisoning and stuff that they had issues with in that bowl game, they still probably beat just about, they probably beat anybody in the country other than Florida that year. And they would have beaten Florida in the regular season. Let's just assume that that would have happened. And other than that, you know, I think everything else evens out and they probably win the national title that year. But I do think they would have had significantly less in the way of conference championships, where in the ACC, they've won 15 over the past 26 years, which is just incredible. I mean, they won, you realize that's 15 having won 2014, 2013, and 2012 are the last ones. Before that, it's basically every title in a row, 92, 93, 94, 95, 96, 97, 98, 99, 2000, 2002, 2003, 2005. Not doing that in the SEC. They wouldn't have won the 92 title, I don't think. I think that Alabama team probably wins that one. They probably win it in 93. They wouldn't win the SEC in 94. I don't think they win the SEC in 95. I think they win the SEC in 96. So let's think about this. 93, they win. 96, they win the SEC. I think 97. Whew. Yeah, well, I mean, they lost at Florida. So we'll say Florida wins it that year. So they don't win it in 97. So that's three through 97. 98 with first year with Winky, and Winky got hurt. They went to the national title game, lost to Tennessee. I'm going to give him 98 and 99, so that's five. SEC was down in the late 90s, so 2000, they probably win it again, so that's six. They're not winning it in 02. I don't think they're winning it in 03. I think that LSU team still wins it. And they're not winning it in 05. So you're looking at 93... 96, 98 through 2000. So five titles. Let's see. Instead of 15 titles, I think they win seven titles. 2013 and 2014, they probably also win at least in 20. So to be safe, I'll say they win six titles instead of 15 conference titles over the last 26 years. In the SEC, they probably win six. And here's the hard part thinking about this is that's only changing one variable. If Florida State doesn't just go on that run in 92, 93, 94, 95, 96, in terms of winning conference titles, being in the top four every year, that establishing that dynasty, does Florida State become Florida State in the same way if they're not winning those conference titles? By the time you get to 97, 98, 99, are they at that kind of advantage? And you can argue that in part, joining the ACC and being able to win the way that they did in those first years in the ACC further accelerated Florida State's success to the point where it gave Florida State an advantage over those, even the old guard teams in the SEC, many of which were down in those years. So, you know, it's hard to assess, but I think ultimately Florida State is better off now for having been in the SEC or for having been in the ACC for the past 26 years than they would be in the SEC. Because again, comparing resource for resource, money for money, those schools are flush with cash that Florida State just doesn't have because of the lack of the major booster base that those teams have built in due to their long history. So Florida State's had the advantage of being able to leverage being the big dog in a smaller pool or the big fish in the smaller pool for all those years to offset the relative lack of resources compared to, say, Alabama or Auburn or LSU or some of these other programs that have more in the way of resources. Being a bigger fish in that smaller pond has allowed them to grow to be an even bigger fish than they would have been in the bigger pond. I mean, you think about in terms of resources, Florida State's closer to like Mississippi State, which actually I think has more money in terms of their donor base and all of that than Florida State does. But you're looking at that kind of thing. But Florida State has punched above its weight for decades now because it became the juggernaut in its own conference, and you have the benefit of geography and, you know, sharing a city with FAMU and all of these other things that give Florida State special advantages, especially once you put them in a conference like the ACC, where for, you know, a lot of years, a lot of teams or a lot of programs are a lot more interested in playing basketball at a high level than playing football. So I think probably six titles over the past 26 years, six conference titles and four national titles over the past 26 years. But again, that's assuming that the 2013 national championship would actually have been feasible, or the 1999 championship would have been feasible, that they would have been able to recruit those teams, that they would have had the same players and the same teams by that point after having been in the SEC for a long time. And that's not clear. That's a really good question, though, for this stage of the year. It's the kind of thing that it's fun to talk about. I'm curious to hear what the listener base thinks on this. I mean, this is where, you know, you can feel free to comment over at unconqueredpodcast.com, but I want to know what you all think on that. I mean, I'm curious to hear whether I've missed something here, but that's my view is I think it would be a lot fewer, less than half of the number of conference championships. And then, you know, it's hard to assess the national championships, but, you know, if you pretend that they're able to maintain the same level of recruiting and everything else that they got partly because of the benefits of being in the ACC and being so dominant, then they probably have four national titles instead of three. So it's kind of an interesting thing. So yeah, beyond that, I'm not going to go into a whole lot more about the first week. I mean, there were discussions all over social media and elsewhere about the starting five linemen that were out there the first day with new offensive line coach Randy Clements, and, you know, a lot of sky is falling type stuff. Guys, remember, it's day one of spring practice. It's day two of spring practice. It's, you know, some of the guys that are going to be playing aren't even on campus. You know, Roberts isn't on campus yet. If they end up with Proctor, he's not on campus yet. So you got to start with somebody. They're not just going to hand jobs to younger guys. And yeah, they're going to figure out, they're going to let guys prove that they can or can't play. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens by the end of spring. But once again, let's not put too much stock into anything that we see or hear through week one. Next week will be kind of an interesting week to gather a little bit more info and get a sense of how guys are adjusting to some of the new stuff and how some of these position changes are working out and all of that. But right now, let's just enjoy the fact that we have a little bit of football to talk about and not panic too much, because there's plenty of time for that come fall. Until then, I'm gonna try to get one out again about midweek next week. But until then, we'll go ahead and wrap here. Once again, want to thank all my sponsors: Garage Makeovers, South Florida's number one garage remodeling company; the Unconquered Network of Realtors, that is Louis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, Florida, and Eric Rostad of Keller Williams Realty in Nashville, Tennessee, in the Franklin, Nashville area. And then also now EPR Creations. If you need a website, they're the people to get it done. If you need any sort of internet marketing, they're the people to talk to. Also want to thank my Patreon supporters, especially those at or above the Secure the Bag level. That is Bert Bertoldi, Keith Cheney, Sean Sost, and Todd Howell. Thanks especially to you guys. You guys have helped out a ton. Also have been continuing to post some recruiting evaluations to Patreon. Just posted the 2018 offensive line class, evaluated those guys. A lot to be really pleased with that group. But yeah, we'll go ahead and wrap there. Go ahead and check that out. If you are a Patreon subscriber, it is available. We'll go ahead and wrap there. This has been the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Look forward to talking to you again around midweek next week.
Thank you all very much and have a great day if you want to.